It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
One of the things that has been troubling to me in the last several years is after the tragedies of 9/11, you saw our nation's immigration policy and our anti-terror policy become one. They were intertwined in a very, I think, dangerous way. And so ICE, I think, has correctly prioritized. You know, ICE says we're looking for folks who are bent on doing us harm, right? We're looking for terrorists. My main issue with the approach of workplace raids like this and the interior enforcement has actually been a question of allocation of enforcement resources.
Tim Fralick at the Immigrant Advocacy Center speaks on how immigrants are treated and mistreated under current law in the second half of a two-part presentation. And if you're one of the millions of working Americans not getting the earned income tax credit, you'll learn later in the show how you could collect up to $4,824 this tax season. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 33, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom land.
And now, this week's news you can use. If you worked in 2008, did you have one child living with you and earn less than $33,995? You can get an earned income tax credit up to $2,917. Did you have more than one child living with you and earn less than $38,646? You can get an earned income tax credit worth up to $4,824. If you had no children living with you, did you earn less than $12,880 and were you between the ages of 25 and 64? You can get an earned income tax credit up to $438. Last year, 23 million eligible families and individuals claimed the earned income tax credit worth $44 billion. And yet, millions of eligible wage earners did not file for the credits. If you need help with either the federal or state tax credits, contact the Greater Richmond Earned Income Tax Credit Coalition at 649-0330 or 501-5828. In other news, since 1986, the low-income housing tax credit has created about 3.1 million apartments that offer rents affordable to low-income people. The IRS and the Virginia Housing Development Authority, or VHDA, offer tax credits to developers. In return, they must rent at least 40% of their units to tenants with incomes 60% or less of the area median income, or must rent 20% of their units to tenants with incomes 50% or less of the area median income. The rent on these units is limited to 30% of the tenant's qualifying income. For many years, it's been uncertain whether owners needed good cause to evict tenants from these units, but a recent IRS revenue ruling confirmed that evictions without cause are prohibited. For more information, contact VHDA at 782 1-800-273-1986 or toll free at 1-877-VHDA-123. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is discrimination. Discrimination means you are treated unfairly or wrongfully because of some protected characteristic or feature. For example, race, religion, national origin, age, sex, pregnancy, sexual harassment, handicap, or disability. Not all unfair treatment gives rise to a legal claim of discrimination. A legal claim of discrimination in employment, housing, or public accommodation must be based on a protected factor. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
Failure to pass immigration reform on the federal level has left state and local officials trying to fix the problem on their own, leading to a climate of fear among Virginia's immigrants. Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Center continues to take us inside the Virginia immigrant communities, who they are, how they contribute to our economy, and how they are being affected by workplace and border enforcement in the second half of a two-part presentation.
And we've seen recent increase in the workplace enforcement here in Virginia as well. So again, bringing this home to Virginia, the relevance to our discussion of policies impacting Virginia's immigrants is you need to know that this is going on, because in the immigrant communities of Virginia, there is fear. Whether you're undocumented or you have a parent who's undocumented or you know somebody in your neighborhood or your employer, you know, there is a lot of fear of workplace enforcement. Some of the recent raids that we've seen in Alexandria, 9 workers on a construction site, Manassas, 28 workers, I believe were installing drywall primarily. In Leesburg, 59 housekeepers and landscapers at the Lansdowne Resort there in Leesburg. Shortly after, within a month of the raid, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, actually held a conference there at the center. You know, one of the things that we talk about every once in a while is how at this point, everyone in the U.S. is benefiting directly from the work of immigrant workers, both documented and undocumented. I thought this was an interesting example where you have the landscaping and the housekeeping at the resort where then ICE comes in and holds their conference. And if there's any question about whether anybody in this room is directly impacted, the Richmond Courthouse, the federal courthouse, they detained 33 workers who were building the new federal courthouse there in Richmond. ICE has actually stated repeatedly that their priority is not to go after workers. My view would be that this sort of raid is largely due to political pressure to make splashes, to make it look like something's being done. We're talking about 11.9 million undocumented workers in the U.S. I think I've listed maybe 1,000 that have been detained. One of the things that has been troubling to me in the last several years is after the tragedies of 9/11, you saw our nation's immigration policy and our anti-terror policy become one. They were intertwined in a very, I think, dangerous way. And so ICE, I think, has correctly prioritized. You know, ICE says, we're looking for folks who are bent on doing us harm, right? We're looking for terrorists. My main issue with the approach of workplace raids like this and the interior enforcement has actually been a question of allocation of enforcement resources. I would argue that it makes much more sense to go after specifically focused on the terrorists and those bent to do us harm rather than looking for immigrants and then trying to sort through 11.9 million to find those few, if they are immigrants, who are trying to do us harm. And so it's just a question of what the priorities are and how those priorities are put into place. This is just an interesting tidbit also about Virginia enforcement. There's a $700 million expansion of Fort Lee going on. And what happens is, what happens at workplaces throughout Virginia every morning, you have the construction crews working for some subcontractor, a guy with a truck. They get in the truck, they're taken somewhere to work, they get to the workplace. It so happens if you're going to work at a federal facility, your ID is going to be checked. And so somebody who one day is working, building a major hotel in downtown Richmond is fine when they're putting in the drywall. The next morning, their contractor takes them over to Fort Lee to put up drywall. This time, there's a gate before they get there. And so quietly, they've detained 186 workers. Again, think about the mixed status families, right? You have the U.S. citizen children. Say there's an undocumented father who works installing drywall. Goes off to work one day, just like any other day, happens to be the day that his crew is going to work at Fort Lee, doesn't come home. Sconder Apprehension Initiative, another source of fear in Virginia right now for the immigrant communities. Part of the effort to identify, apprehend, and remove aliens who failed to surrender for removal or to comply with the removal order. So you might have heard of what they called the catch and release program. We'd catch somebody down in the border region or somewhere else, and we'd give them a piece of paper that says you need to show up in court on such and such a day. The way it looked to a lot of the folks who were detained is they were picked up, they were given a piece of paper, and released. And so they went about their lives. And that may have been 15 years ago. But now what's happening, again, with the increased interior enforcement, is they're going through the database, figuring out who failed to appear. A lot more resources now for tracking down individuals, including the National Crime Information Center database, the NCIC databases, property records. And they can actually locate folks who 15 years ago missed their court date and who have gone on and have had U.S. citizen children here raising their families. And what's happening, what happened in Charlottesville, for example, at one of our local trailer parks, you had a team of agents show up at about 2 in the morning looking for a specific individual. They found the specific individual. They detained a couple other folks. And now we have a 14-year-old in foster care. 287G agreements. And basically, this is an agreement that the Department of Homeland Security can enter into with a state or local law enforcement agency that gives specifically enumerated and trained officers in that local or state police force immigration law enforcement functions. The enforcement of federal immigration law is a federal issue, right? A federal job. Okay, but if a police department or sheriff's office decides to enter into one of these memoranda of agreement with the Department of Homeland Security, they can get their officers trained, and those specific officers who've received the training, if they're working in conjunction with a federal agent, an immigration agent, they can perform some immigration-related functions. The reason I put this in is because out of 62 of them that have been entered into nationwide, we have 9 here in Virginia. So this is something that's of apparently special interest here in Virginia. One of the other main contributions to the fear in Virginia's immigrant communities right now, when you have the failure on the federal level to do anything, okay, you have then the state and local governments trying to step up and do something on their own. 2008, 110 bills targeting immigrants in a negative way. One of the things that the benefit of having just such an absurd number of anti-immigrant bills in this last General Assembly session is those of us who've been tracking these issues for years, we're like, there's no way we can go after all these. And we've been talking over the years with the business community about the need for them to protect their workforce. If they were going to use immigrant workforce, they need to protect their workforce. Finally, this last year, there was a group form called the Virginia Employers for Sensible Immigration Policy that stepped up and basically worked all the bills that were impacting their own businesses. That was a hugely significant development on the state level this last year, was having the business community finally say, hey, wait, this is ridiculous. Virginia is, what, number one for business, right? We're very proud of that here in Virginia, and they wanted to step up and make sure that that kept going on.
You're listening to a presentation by Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Center about Virginia's immigrant communities and how they're being affected by workplace and border enforcement. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the Immigrant Advocacy Center's Tim Freilich about how Virginia's immigrants are treated and mistreated under current law.
There aren't 110 different issues by any means. If you follow the General Assembly, you'll start with 110 bills. They'll immediately collapse into about 20. Back to the law enforcement thing. This is huge because this issue, probably more than any other, is one that is directly impacting the immigrant communities in a major, major way. The issue is state and local law enforcement. Should they be enforcing immigration law? And if so, then it becomes a line-drawing question of when do you want state and local police enforcing immigration law? The key thing to understand, and that a lot of law enforcement, key law enforcement leaders in Virginia understand, is that successful community policing efforts depend on having trust between the immigrant communities of Virginia and local law enforcement. So one of the heroes in this debate on the state level in the General Assembly the last few years has been Chief Rohrer of Fairfax County, Virginia. He comes down and he says, my job and my department's job is to protect the safety and security of everyone who lives in my community. If my officers are perceived as federal immigration agents in a county, you know, that is incredibly diverse. Our offices in Fairfax County, in the Falls Church section of Fairfax County, our zip code 68% foreign born in the Falls Church Colmore area there. 68% foreign born, that's in Chief Rohrer's jurisdiction. He knows that if his officers are seen as immigration enforcers, it's going to destroy the trust. I mean, they've had tremendous success building trust with the immigrant communities in Fairfax County, in Arlington, in Alexandria. And when Prince William County this last year started doing their crackdown on immigrants, there was a huge pushback from those other jurisdictions saying, wait, we've invested millions of dollars in our community policing efforts, winning the trust of the immigrant communities. Now you're going to blow it by having your local police officers be seen as immigration agents. So this last session, there was a bill that was sort of to try and drive that point home. It was a bill introduced in the Virginia Senate that would have protected immigrant any victims and witnesses of crime from having to answer questions about their immigration status. The scenario that's trying to address is the issue, for example, if you have a woman who's in her home who is brutally attacked and she knows her attacker, but she's undocumented or there's somebody who's undocumented in her home, okay, we want that victim to feel comfortable immediately calling the local police and saying, I was just a victim, I know the attacker, it's this person. If, on the other hand, you have local police who are enforcing immigration law, you know, we do not want that either immigrant victim or witness of crime to be afraid to contact the local police to report the crime. This is a bill that passed, though, and is a new law as of July 1st, and that is basically, I mentioned it's a line-drawing question about local police becoming involved in immigration enforcement. The big fight in Virginia over the last couple years has been, should a street beat cop, right? Should a cop on the street who comes in contact with somebody, should they ask the person they come in contact with about their immigration status? Well, what about if the person has committed a crime? At that point, is it cool for the cop on the street to ask about immigration status? Okay, what about once that you've arrested somebody for a crime and they're in custody in your jail? How about then? The line was drawn in Virginia this past year after a couple years of fighting and studying and the task forces, and they drew the line at once somebody's in custody. So these are pre-conviction inquiries into immigration status. Okay, but this is once somebody is in the custody of a jail, the person asks, you know, the officer asks, we're born in a country other than the U.S., are you a citizen of a country other than the U.S.? And if they determine that the answer is yes to either of those, they make an inquiry to what's called the Law Enforcement Support Center of ICE. And it would be great if the Law Enforcement Support Center had a database of everybody who is lawfully present in the U.S. They don't. What they have is a database of folks who have been ordered removed. Another one that was passed this past year, when somebody is detained and being charged with a crime, the decision, are they going to be able to post bail, or the judge is going to determine whether or not a bail amount is going to be set. There's now a presumption of no bail. It's a rebuttable presumption, okay, but a presumption of no bail for illegal aliens charged with certain crimes. When this was coming up for discussion, the policy issues or the questions that people were struggling with was, well, is somebody who's undocumented, for example, who has two U.S. citizen children that are in high school here in the U.S. They were born here. They're raising their family. They have a steady job. Is that person actually a greater flight risk than, you know, an aimless drifter U.S. citizen who, you know, is going around the country committing all sorts of crimes? Post 9/11, immigration policy and anti-terror policy in the U.S. became sort of dangerously intertwined. I think this issue was the clearest, okay? So this was not passed until 2003, but if you think about it, September 2001, so the General Assembly session was immediately happening right after that. What they did was, we need to think about this, and so they kicked it to a commission for a year and discussed whether or not folks who are undocumented should be able to get Virginia driver's licenses. The law here in Virginia that everybody has to deal with, you have to prove that you're lawfully present, right? You have to prove your legal presence in Virginia. That's a law that I think anybody who has had to apply for a new license or get a renewal who hadn't initially shown their proof of legal presence in the U.S. Has had to struggle with. Most people get around it by, or are able to meet that by either showing a birth certificate or a passport. But what I wanted to mention for folks who are having people come in and saying, well, you know, I tried to get a driver's license, I was turned away. Okay, it's pretty basic right now. The first question is, well, look, or the first statement is, look, if you're not lawfully present in the U.S., you cannot lawfully get a driver's license in Virginia. The other issue, though, is proving the lawful presence. And we've had some issues with our local DMV office. Immigration law is phenomenally complex. The documents are, some of them, you cannot believe that some of the documents are actually what is required to show that you're legally present in the U.S. So access to higher education. So the issue that we're talking about here has to do with, imagine, if you will, the two-year-old child who is carried across the border by their undocumented parents. They grow up in Virginia. They go to public school here in Virginia their entire childhood. They're graduating from high school at the top of their class, member of the National Honor Society, and they want to go to college, but their family doesn't have a lot of money, so they're looking to the state institutions of higher learning, the public colleges and universities here in Virginia. And the two issues that have been coming up repeatedly every General Assembly session now for the last 3 or 4 years have been eligibility for admission. Can somebody who's undocumented, that undocumented kid, not a U.S. citizen, wasn't born here in the U.S., but was carried across the border when they were a baby, right, has grown up in the U.S., doesn't remember the home country, may not speak Spanish if they're from Mexico originally, but they're under law in Virginia, right? You know, the question has been, are they eligible for admission to public institutions of higher education? If they're eligible, are they eligible for in-state tuition if they've grown up in Virginia? So these have been hot issues. There's a Supreme Court decision that talks about primary education, right? Plyler v. Doe, a case out of Texas where the Supreme Court basically said it was a statute regarding funding. Did the state have to fund the public education, primary school education of undocumented kids? It was a 5-4 decision. Basically, they upheld the idea that undocumented children are entitled to the same free public education as any other child for various reasons, and basically saying that, you know, the kids didn't get to choose their immigration status. Why would we now punish them by not giving them an education? So this Supreme Court decision exists and is why undocumented children in Virginia can go to primary school without a problem.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a presentation by Tim Freilich from the Immigrant Advocacy Center about Virginia's immigrants and how they're being affected by workplace and border enforcement. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show.
This week's top three tips are about employment references. The first tip is that no former employer can intentionally and spitefully say untrue things about you to prevent you from getting another job. The second tip is that a former employer can give a true statement of the reasons why you were fired from a job or a true statement about your character, industry, and ability if you voluntarily left a job. The third tip is that if a former employer is deliberately and maliciously saying untrue things about you to keep you from getting another job, you can sue your former employer for money damages. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. The Virginia General Assembly convened 3 weeks ago. Join us next week in the first of a three-part series when Ali Farouk, policy analyst with the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy, highlights housing and immigration issues before the General Assembly, and why asking victims and witnesses of crime about their immigration status is bad policy and bad police work. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wakebright.